The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks for being here this morning. Well, this afternoon, this is from Time Magazine. I love how they wrote this. On Wednesday afternoon, nearly every smartphone in America will blare and vibrate with an emergency alert, the first ever test of the national presidential alert system, not election system. That would get people ticked off, especially on the left. The presidential alert is similar to the state-level systems that let police and local authorities send out amber alerts and weather warnings. The biggest difference is scale. The nationwide system is designed to blast a message to all 225 million smartphones in the United States, reaching about 75% of the population. News of the presidential alert test drew almost immediate criticism on social media, with some people vowing to turn off their phones, believing wrongly that they will be a captive audience of President Donald Trump. Some were worried that the system would allow him to tweet every American.
Mm-hmm. Or text every American.
Yeah, it's a tweet here in the story.
Yeah.
The Federal Emergency Management Agency and experts say the presidential alert will not be Trump's personal megaphone to America.
Yet.
But I love the instead, they argue. I just love it. They argue.
Are they screaming? Yeah.
It's a necessary 21st century update to the emergency alert system that has for decades allowed the president to authorize broadcasts on every television and radio in the country in an event of a national emergency. So at 2:18 this afternoon, FEMA will send out the first message testing the new nationwide presidential level wireless emergency alert. It will go to every smartphone in America that is turned on and within range of a cell tower. There is no opt-out. Originally scheduled for September 20th, the test was rescheduled to today due to Hurricane Florence. Mm-hmm. The message to smartphones will be followed by an emergency alert system message broadcast on every TV and radio. At 2:20 p.m. Eastern Time, it will feature a voice that says this is a test of the emergency, the National Emergency Alert System. The system was developed by broadcast and cable operators in voluntary cooperation with the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the Federal Communications Commission, and local authorities to keep you informed in the event of an emergency. Mm-hmm. If this had been an actual emergency, an official message would have been followed. The tone alert you heard at the start of the message, a similar wireless emergency alert test message, has been sent to all cell phones nationwide. Some cell phones will receive the message. Others will not. No action is required.
The difference, this text will end with the word sad and an exclamation point.
Right. Now, interestingly enough, a new lawsuit was filed in New York. This is from CBS. A new lawsuit filed in New York is seeking to stop the implementation of FEMA's new presidential alert messaging system, an alert used for national emergencies that can be deployed by President Trump. Plaintiffs in Manhattan are suing Mr. Trump and FEMA administrator Brock Long, claiming the alert system is a violation of Americans' First and Fourth Amendment rights to be free from... I have to go down a little bit here in the actual story. I'm actually reading this off my phone. To be free from government compelled listening, as well as warrantless non-consensual trespass into the seizure of their cellular devices. Plaintiffs compare the alert system to hijacking private property for the purpose of planting a government-controlled loudspeaker in the home and on the person of every American.
Nope, every cell phone owner.
Well, the problem is the precedent's already been set. Mm-hmm.
You would have to abolish essentially the EAS.
Yes, because people have their radios and people have their TVs.
Yep.
And that would be.
And that's commandeering if there is a storm, if there is a warning.
Right.
That's basically commandeering your device, and the government doesn't get to do that.
Right.
It isn't necessarily commandeering your advice. If your device is on, is A, turned off, or B, you're watching something on online. You're watching, you're on Netflix. You're on Hulu. So it is in broadcast mode. I'm talking about televisions and radios.
And by the way, the FCC regulates.
They regulate the broadcast.
Cellular.
They regulate the cell phones.
Right.
So
they regulate the cell towers. Mm-hmm. So the government has
already has authority.
Yeah, they've got
over
authority
the
cell over it. So this lawsuit's not going to go anywhere.
No, it's not.
Again, though, you can make the thing that Trump's trying to control all the cell phones, and that way you'll get support for it.
Well, so. He's already listening to you on the cell phones. Oops. Did I say that out loud? Was that my inside
well,
or outside
you know,
voice?
The thing is, the government, you know, somebody is, we're constantly monitored here on this show.
Yeah, we are.
Every
We have government officials listening to every word we're saying on this program, and
right
that's
now.
Disturbing.
I mean, they might be low-level government officials, like somebody in City Hall or something of a
right.
small town.
Right,
but it's, you know.
Or as we call them, the more important level. Because they're listening right now.
The lawsuit's not going to go anywhere,
no.
just based on precedent.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
No, so nice try, but you know you can't make it that it's a. By the way, is I'm laughing here when I think about the whole metadata thing, and then sending a message out.
No, it's okay. They can have all the metadata they want. Yeah, no problem there.
Collect everything we want off your cell phone, but to send you a message, no, that would be commandeering.
Yeah, and then
I'm chuckling over
you know, that you know the government doesn't. I don't have to share anything with anybody. And then of course they do 5 million shares a day on Facebook. Put all their information on Facebook. Here's my cell number if you want to call me, that kind of thing. But it is a you know that this is a function of the government in order to alert the people. It's not Trump, although it would be funny. In California, the governor takes over, and you know, back in the day with Arnold as the governor. Yeah, listen to me, everyone. I just want to FaceTime you today and tell you we're doing this test and of this and that and there, and everyone's going to be fine. It's going to be okay. Calm down. There's no emergency right now. There might be an emergency in the future,
well,
but not now.
Well, you just go remember the movie 2012.
Yeah, right.
Remember, it's him.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it him in the movie talking that everything's going to be all right?
Oh, as governor?
As governor.
Was it?
I believe, that everything is going to be safe.
Going to be fine.
There's no problem. All of a sudden, as soon as everything is going to be fine.
Yeah, it's going to be fine.
And all of a sudden, the earthquake hits.
Woody is going to save us all. And this trailer there out in the middle of nowhere is going to save everybody. The whole planet is going to survive because of that.
And it's like, everything's going to be fine. It's like right when he says the word, like, everybody is safe. The whole state starts shaking.
So funny. It'd be funny if all of a sudden Trump took over everybody's phone and he's FaceTiming with different individuals. Hey, what are you up to? Oh my gosh, it's the president. Yeah. No, this is a function of the government. We can have your debates over. Now, I will tell you that when you're you know, when you're asleep, especially people that work our shift, the first shift, as we call it, and sleep during the day, and your phone goes off with that loud noise, either an EAS or, in our area, Amber Alert. I don't know if that's the case with every area on Amber Alerts, but it goes out, and it's a very loud tone. You actually can change the settings on your phone for the tone, for the audible part of it. I don't know if that's the case with this new implementation. I'm guessing it is.
A couple of other stories you want to cover, and then we'll get back to your calls and comments. We've been dominated for the last couple of weeks on the Kavanaugh thing, and we continue to talk about it. And we'll have more to say and more of your calls and comments coming up. But you see a story, Amazon now to pay $15 an hour minimum wage. Mm-hmm. And now, after they announce it, they are now going to promote that the government raise the minimum wage from $7.50 an hour.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Oh, you're doing it now that you've mm-hmm. raised it. Yes.
Yeah, right.
Not unexpected with the tight labor market that we have today.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there was a lot of flack on, especially early on as they were setting up the distribution centers for Amazon, receiving a lot of negative press on the workers being overworked and underpaid and that kind of thing. You set the new standard, which goes above, I think, even the Costco starting, or maybe it's the same as Costco. I can't remember where Costco went. Walmart went to $10 an hour a few years ago on starting wage. And the starting wage now, you know, will be $15 an hour. By the way, private sector companies can do that if they wish. But it is about. And here's what happened at Walmart. They were changing not just the pay. There's a public relations point to be made there. No problem. But it's also to attract people who might stay with and retain people for a much longer period. They did the same thing with their college, which they're offering college if you work part-time or full-time at Walmart for roughly $1 a day. They basically take it out of your check and you go to an online course. There's two universities, but you have to do a business degree or a degree in logistics. But either way, logistics management, I think it is. But what they're trying to do is get people, train people to be at a company for a long time. That's what every private sector company wants to do, and they're going to pay, and I think the market has changed for an Amazon, because Amazon now, you know, essentially being the biggest, and they're taking on Walmart, and Walmart's taking on Amazon. You got to fight for that number one spot, and one way you do that is by building your greatest resource, which is your employees.
Did you see the new head of Lowe's who was talking about he originally came from, started at Home Depot, whatever, and it's
right.
Like,
yeah.
You know, their goal now is to actually cut costs in labor to focus not on so much of their employees, you know, doing the inventory and stocking, but they want their employees to be the customer service people.
Yes.
Talking and helping the people that come in the store.
Help you find the product promotes sales.
That's what they want done. And so automation, whatever they possibly can do, any of the labor work, they're trying to find somebody else to, you know, somebody else or not somebody else, whether they subcontract it.
Another method.
For cheaper. They want another method than to have their own employees doing it.
But Amazon has developed that. Amazon has developed that in their warehouses for shipping. So there's a lot of automation going on in those warehouses where, you know, well, why would I pay someone to, you know, do this part of it when I could do that automated? It would be more efficient. It would be faster. But the people can do other jobs.
Well, as we said with the new trade deal with Mexico and Canada, by the president coming in and stating that there has to be more North American materials in all the vehicles in all the three countries, and setting labor standards and some wages in Mexico, what you're doing is you're going to be driving out the lower worker and expect to see a ton more automation coming to Mexico and the United States.
Lower skilled workers will be, again, overlooked.
Lower skilled workers in the United States and Mexico will be overlooked, and they're going to be looking to do whatever they possibly can, because fewer cars will be sold, because the price of cars, because of the new trade deal, will be going up in the United States, Mexico, and Canada. And that's not the only worry. The other worry, because remember what the president said, one of the president's main goal, we talked about this yesterday, was to have companies in the United States producing it here and selling it elsewhere. Well, by doing what he did, you're going to get the opposite.
Right.
There's going to be less of a chance of America being able to make cars here and sell them elsewhere because of all the rules and regulations we have put on cars in all of North America, in Canada, and I have to say North America and then say Canada Mexico and and the United States, because they have changed North America to that in the actual naming of it. And so, you know, we discussed it yesterday. The Wall Street Journal and others, you know, had that discussion saying, look, you're actually going to hurt car production in the United States. You're going to hurt lower skilled jobs, especially in Mexico, where they're simply going to say, fine, you're gone, automation. You know, automation comes into this particular point, and in the United States too, and you're still not going to be able to defeat all the cost of the regulation from government in the new trade deal, which means what? There's less of a chance we can build automobiles here and sell them overseas, which is exactly what the president wanted. And now he's implemented a program that does exactly the opposite of what he claimed he wanted to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
That's the frustrating part.
Mm-hmm. Well, and keep in mind, in 2008, when the domestic automakers were bleeding cash, their foreign arms, their foreign business was what was keeping them alive.
You've now encouraged the foreign arms to say, okay, we're going to make them all over here.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the president's number one complaints. Mm-hmm. And so he implements something that will have the opposite effect,
mm-hmm.
based on economics, which is how people respond to incentive and disincentive.
Mm-hmm.
Not my opinion. It's how people respond.
Yeah, right.
866-90-RED-EYE.
In addition to being required by law, pre- and post-trip inspections are vital to the safety of professional drivers. Conducting thorough pre-trip inspections allows you to catch any problems before heading out on the road. Post-trip inspections give the shop time to react to any problems that were identified. During your next pre- or post-trip inspection, check your tire's tread depth to ensure they have at least 4/32 on steering axles and at least 2/32 on all other positions. They should be properly inflated and safely mounted on the vehicle. TA Truck Service understands the importance of these inspections. If you find any issues during your own pre- or post-trip inspection, stop by a location near you to have your vehicle looked at by one of our expert technicians.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. I think they make a Kavanaugh for plagiarizing Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Yeah.
Here it is, Justice Ginsburg, not 100% sober at the State of the Union, going back to the State of the Union address back in, when was it, 2015, was it?
Yeah, it was a few years ago where she fell asleep.
Yeah, or 2013, yeah.
Hmm.
When she fell asleep, just looking at the article here, and she didn't pass out, she fell asleep.
Right. Yeah. She didn't black out.
Right.
From drinking too much wine,
she fell asleep. Yeah, so that's...
Mm-hmm.
So did he go back to, you know, that's what I'm wondering, whether he's plagiarizing, took her excuse.
Right.
Maybe she called him. I'm sorry. That's how bad it's gotten.
No. Maybe Ms. Ginsburg called him ahead of the testimony and said, look, just very simple. You drank beer, you fell asleep. I do it all the time. I drink wine, I fall asleep. You don't black out, you fall asleep.
A lot of times, if people drink wine at night,
well,
when they're tired, and if they have a glass of wine,
when they're producing
the
show, yes.
Well, the alcohol keeps us
awake. This is what I said the other night. Nearly 100% of people who go to bars, especially at night, go home and
go to sleep.
Did they black out? I'm going to go home later, take some melatonin, and black out. I mean,
all right. Coming up next, we'll cover the latest on this story.
Yeah. Okay.
So, there you go.
What?
Red Eye Radio.
Okay.
He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Looking at the latest poll, Harris poll on Kavanaugh nomination and other things.
Mm-hmm.
And this is post-testimony.
Yeah.
After the testimony, a majority of voters, 89%, has watched or heard about the Kavanaugh hearings.
Okay. Watched or heard. Wow. Right. Separate those two groups, though.
Majority of voters agreed with the Senate decision to delay the vote by a week and involve the FBI to search for corroborating evidence. If the FBI review finds no corroborating evidence, 60% of voters support the confirmation of Kavanaugh.
Hmm.
When it came to, let me see, the Dianne Feinstein here, it was 75% of Americans disagreed with the fact that she kept the letter.
Yeah, right.
She should have given it to the... She's not winning that one at all.
No, not at all. Because for Democrats or liberals, they would see that as, look, you could have done something early on about this, and it would have been a bigger story, potentially, if you would have done something about it. Then. And then for the conservatives or Republicans and maybe even people in the middle, she violated essentially the process and the rules. And I think then easily you can move on to the who leaked it about Ford, because the Democrats claiming they wanted to help protect her, but yet it's clear now that they're the ones who leaked it to the media in order to out her, in order to make the story public.
There it is. 75% of voters believe that Senator Dianne Feinstein should have immediately turned over the letter from Christine Ford to the Senate Judiciary Committee in July when she received it, which means the Republicans have made their point there.
Yep.
On other issues, a Russian investigation. Americans want transparency when it comes to how and why the investigation was launched.
Yeah.
65% of Americans, this poll was just done, by the way, 65% of Americans say it's important to turn over evidence from the FBI and the Justice Department to clear the air in how the investigation was started. 2/3 of American voters want an investigation into potential abuses at the FBI, although voters are split on whether or not bias played a role in launching the investigation. 52% said bias played a role. 48% say bias didn't play a role, but 2/3 of Americans believe. And I would say that if you say 48% say there's no bias in the role and 52% say there is bias, the fact that you have 66% of American voters favor an investigation, that means many that believe bias didn't play a role believe it should be investigated anyway. You're talking about, again, the independents there. Those are independents that are saying, okay, I'm not sure, maybe I don't think so, but yeah, I think an investigation should be done.
Right.
So that 65% of American voters favor that investigation. Where we are right now, the FBI report could be released only to the Senate. It will not be made public unless it's leaked.
Yeah.
Excuse me. It won't be made public until it leaks.
And then liberals will be screaming for transparency. The first time they've screamed transparency regarding the FBI in, I don't know, roughly, I'm just taking a guess, the last couple of years or so.
Uh, you know, it's interesting that it seems like after 2 years, Americans are paying attention apparently to the Russian investigation. 65% of Americans polled, you know, believe that the investigation, you know, into the FBI and Department of Justice to see how the investigation started is warranted. Hey, maybe there's a couple of Democrats in there, like we say, that believe that Trump committed collusion. And they want to find out
and
whether
they want, and they want him to release it to
prove that he committed. Maybe there's a couple of people in there that actually believe that.
Well, I mean, if you look at the number, I mean, that would go, you know, beyond that that typical party line number of 60, you know, of the people in the center being roughly 20, the independents, and then Republicans being the other 40. So that goes to 65, which is, means there's likely a couple, a few Democrats or liberals mixed in that. And who knows why they want it, but yeah, maybe they think that it's going to show that he's guilty. But we've been saying this. It doesn't matter who's guilty of what. What was done was done. So somebody needs to be brought to justice. There needs to be justice in this case, but there can't be without transparency.
And by the way, we pointed out again today because we haven't been able to, we talked about it earlier because we had received an email and we had talked about it. We believe it was early last week. And this is the, because we've been getting some questions. Hey, what happened to the whole FISA warrant application and those 21 pages? We're getting feedback from our listeners saying, hey, it just disappeared. President says he's going to declassify it. It disappeared. What happened? Nobody's talking about the story.
Right.
Well, we did early last week when we said, because we were sitting here on the air and the Kavanaugh thing was big at that point, and we finally, Eric and I just started talking about it casually on the air and saying, yeah, I mean, what in the world? Why would you send it to the inspector general? You know, because what they're saying is, okay, there may be some sensitive things in here. We have some of our allies. We're going to release it, but even we have some objection from our allies, and we're going to send it to the inspector general to go through this thing to go through this thing in an expedited way. And we went, inspector general? Well, the inspector general has nothing to do with whether you release something because it's sensitive, top secret material. That would be your director of national intelligence.
Right.
That might be, you might get advice from Mike Pompeo because it's a former CIA director in talking about, okay, what do our allies object to, which we heard was Great Britain and information on Christopher Steele that they didn't want released. But we still started thinking to ourselves, wait a minute, why would it go to the inspector general? The inspector general, we don't understand this. It doesn't make any sense. He only investigates corruption.
Oh. Yeah.
So in the unredacted version, they have found information that they wish to give to the Inspector General of the United States, the Inspector General of the Department of Justice, whose job is to find corruption and abuses in the Department of Justice.
Because you look at that scenario, imagine that. Okay, so the president's reviewing that, and certainly you have Kelly in the room with him and then advising as chief of staff. Where do you go with this? I could see General Kelly looking at this, and the president clearly looking at this going, okay, if this is this massive abuse of power under the in the Obama administration, if that is the case, if we're seeing what we think we see here, then this actually will require Horowitz, the inspector general, to be involved. I mean, that's going to happen anyway, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But you take the politics out of it because you let the IG do all the investigation on it. Tell us what happened here. Because the IG is going to have access to records. Keep in mind what it was like for Republicans on oversight committees, and really the White House. The White House has been calling, you know, echoing the Trey Gowdies and the Devin Nunes's of the world in calling for the release of those documents by the FBI. Well, guess what? The IG doesn't have to call for that. The IG has access to it directly.
Yep.
So the IG takes this, and the president, because if the president comes out and says, hey, we recognize abuse here, we see this based on this unredacted material now from the Justice Department, well, that instantly becomes political, especially with this president. while the president has that authority to come out and announce that clearly and has the authority to declassify that, that's not the issue. You take the politics part of it away, and you also expedite the process of not just looking at these documents, but the IG has access to everything in the Department of Justice and any kind of trail on devices and everything else that the president would, it would take a million years for the president to call for that and for that to be handed over.
And you take away from Adam Schiff the accusation that you're selectively just declassifying part of it.
Right.
Because when you give it to the inspector general, he's going to cover that part of it.
What is
the context of everything that you have released?
Mm-hmm.
Let's expand the investigation. And all of a sudden, everybody went quiet. And the interesting thing is we talked about that, you know, Devin Nunes initially was asked, what's going on here? I mean,
right.
they could have done this thing, and why give it to the inspector general? And then he's gone quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has gone quiet on this. You hear nothing.
Right.
And the media is not covering it. Really, the mainstream media, I haven't seen one story in the mainstream media about why did they give it to the inspector general? Why is the inspector general looking at all this? He only looks at corruption.
Right.
That's what he's looking. He's looking for corruption in the Department of Justice. They redacted this, and all of a sudden, they don't release it, and it goes to the inspector general? Well, did they find out that it's that the redacted part is things that the inspector general has actually been looking at right now?
Right.
And so it goes to either help assist in the investigation, or the fact is he's got all this material and has looked at it already. And it's part of the, when you talk about Russia probe, Trump didn't say what Russia probe.
Right. Which one?
Which one? Because I read it and said, oh, Russian probe. Which Russian probe? We initially thought, you know, because on the one time they said, well, this will interfere with Mueller's investigation.
Right.
But on the tweet he said, Russian probe.
Right.
And I went, oh, well, that might have been the Mueller investigation then.
Right.
It may not be the investigation that they're talking about. He didn't say Mueller. He said Russian probe. I'm like, whoa.
Now look at the pattern of behavior in the entire history of this whole thing. Starting in the beginning of 2017, right?
Yep.
What was that pattern of behavior? Leaks to the media. How many of those leaks favored Trump? Almost or maybe exactly zero.
Zero.
So you have this situation. There are people on Capitol Hill and in the Justice Department that are not, obviously not Trump, on Trump's side. If this unredacted classified material had damaging information about Trump, wouldn't we at least start hearing those types of rumors? The sources say it's very damaging on Trump. And if that were the case, would he also turn it over to the inspector general if it were? Because it wouldn't serve him politically,
and he
was not required to turn it over to the IG.
Right, but I don't think any of this is any information that Trump was involved in. This was all the FBI and the Department of Justice.
I know, but what I'm saying is it would be damaging to Trump that they were finding something on him that that it is that the whole thing was legitimate and it was based on something real. We haven't heard that. And if that were the case, when the president had it, would he turn it over to the IG? He isn't required to do that.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. So here's where we are right now. Mm. The FBI background check, not investigation. Multiple sources are telling multiple news media outlets could be released to the Senate as early as today. Now, it's not going to be made open to the public. It's only going to be the 100 senators who will be able to get it. Protocol on background checks are that none of it is released to the public. That has been the way that's always been with background checks. Right. I expect that portions of it will leak. Then again, will Democrats leak portions of it that are favorable to them if, in the entire context, it is not later on when the full thing is released?
Mm. Yeah. You know, I think it's going to be interesting to watch the timeline here evolve, because if the FBI has wrapped up their part of the interview process, then we could expect their report and or memo or whatever it's going to be called. It's a report, I guess, to be presented within roughly 24 hours of, you know, the interviews ending. So it could happen. Some are saying today or Thursday. The Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, saying, look, there's not going to be a vote, you know, until we get that report, but there will be one this week.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. In the news today, oh boy, here we go.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI report could be released. That'd be correct. All right. We keep saying the FBI investigation. Everybody's doing it. It's the FBI background check. But the FBI, right. The FBI report on the background check on Justice Brett Kavanaugh could be released as early as today, sources are telling a variety of different media out there this morning.
Mm-hmm.
So we will see whether that happens or not. If that happens, there could be a vote as early as Friday.
Right. The Senate Majority Leader, talking to the press yesterday, the Hill.com said that the GOP was being coy about when they would vote. Well, he wasn't being coy. The Majority Leader made it clear, look, you all know how this works. And cloture has to be filed, and you can't have a vote until 48 hours after cloture. And then you move on to the vote, you know, 2 days later. So it's not like you can you have cloture, and then all of a sudden you can instantly do a vote. It doesn't work that way. So essentially telling the media that, you know, you'll know it's going to be 2 days out, at least 2 days out, you know, from the point of cloture on. So that puts it, at least right now, that puts it as early as Friday if it were to happen today. Or, as many have already said over the last few days, that they could see a vote on the Senate floor, you know, Saturday or even Sunday, which would still give time to the president, if he is confirmed, Kavanaugh is confirmed, to have him sworn in and then seated on the bench on Monday, having only missed the first week of activity there at SCOTUS.
This is actually an important development here, and we'll tell you what benchmark it says. But reading here from National Review, Chuck Grassley has sent a letter to Dr. Ford's lawyer requesting more information. Specifically, Grassley wants the therapist's notes, all audio or video recordings produced during the course of the polygraphed examination of Dr. Ford, and all written and audio, visual, or any other documentation of talking to any other reporter or anyone else at any media organization.
Right.
They believe that some material has been passed to a nationally circulated newspaper, but not provided to the Senate. He suggests this is a lack of candor. Adjacent to these requests is a paragraph that reads, from Grassley, "The full details of Dr. Ford's polygraph are particularly important because the Senate Judiciary Committee has received a sworn statement from a longtime boyfriend of Dr. Ford stating that he personally witnessed Dr. Ford coaching a friend on a polygraph examination. When asked under oath in the hearing whether she'd ever given any tips or advice to someone who was planning on taking a polygraph, Dr. Ford replied, never. This statement raises specific concerns about the reliability of her polygraph examination results. The Senate, therefore, needs this information. They want the therapist's notes. They want all information on the polygraph. They want anything that she has sent or her lawyers has sent to any media organization that they have not sent to the Senate Judiciary Committee. He also writes that Dr. Ford never brought up anything regarding, or excuse me, the sworn statement from the longtime boyfriend of Dr. Ford's is now online. In it, the ex-boyfriend claims under oath that he witnessed Dr. Ford help Ford's friend prepare for a potential polygraph examination. Dr. Ford explained in detail what to expect, how polygraphs worked, and to help her friend become familiar and less nervous about the exam. He also writes, Dr. Ford never brought up anything regarding her experience as a victim of sexual assault, harassment, or misconduct, that she never mentioned Brett Kavanaugh, that she never indicated a fear of flying, that she never expressed a fear of closed quarters, tight spaces, or places with only one exit, that she was unfaithful, and that she committed fraud by using a credit card from which she had been removed long after she had broken up with the card holder, who I'm guessing is the ex-boyfriend.
Mm.
Did it in a sworn statement under the threat of perjury, as we all know. And this is really, when you think about this case, this is the first time that anybody has come in under, you know, and refuted directly, sworn testimony as to what someone said at that actual hearing.
Right. Yeah, because we've had the claims that Kavanaugh wasn't telling the truth, but nothing in terms of sworn testimony at this point, you know, where they are essentially under oath. And in this case,
by the way, relating directly to this case, not the offshoot, as we
wouldn't apply,
right,
for the classmate at Yale,
right,
and anyone else that focused on, again, the anything that the. It would apply if there was political will. I guess it could apply if he said something that was inaccurate. By the way, try and measure that. If he said that I went to a bar and I ordered 7 drinks and he ordered 70 drinks and they could prove it, they might have a point. But they're trying to quantify the people that are against Kavanaugh, including the Yale classmate, trying to quantify something that you can't quantify.
Well,
and saying, in one case, if he had said this, that's actually what he did say, then I'd be okay with it. But he did say that.
Right. And so you're trying to determine the level of intoxication of somebody 36 years ago.
Right.
And since we now have a society that gets high instead of drinking,
mm-hmm.
since that seems to be the direction we're going, that's like saying, how high was he?
Yeah.
I was pretty high. No, dude, you were just really stoned. That's perjury.
See,
think about it. I mean, that's,
here's the thing. You know, by the left standard, he could say, if it were about pot, he could say, well, he tried it, but he didn't inhale. That would be perfectly acceptable for Kavanaugh, right?
I drank the beer, but I spit it out.
Exactly.
I never. I know, that was a bad Clinton. And that's why this is refuting specifically,
right,
about a specific, you know, something that she never did when it came to a polygraph. That's not trying to figure out how drunk were you 36 years ago,
right,
at no specific time is designated as, there's no incident to how drunk you were at one specific time. It's in general in your whole life.
Right.
Yeah, I've been pretty wasted at times. How wasted? Really wasted. I think you were mega wasted.
Yeah.
You've committed perjury. You said really wasted. You were mega wasted. Oh, yeah. So I'm doing 5 years for perjury in prison. For what? I said I was really wasted, and they believed the guy that said I was mega wasted. What's the difference?
Well, it's like the PSA buzz driving is drunk driving. And then, of course, the drunk sitting in front of the TV. No, it's not. Shut up. It's not. But it's,
well, the entire thing is, if technically, you know, the whole, because this is how I think of when I see the buzz driving. Mm-hmm. Well, wait a minute. If I'm at 0.05.
Mm-hmm. And I feel a buzz.
And I feel a buzz. Mm-hmm. It isn't drunk driving.
Mm-hmm. Not by my state standard. Right.
Yes, not by this state standard. I don't think anybody's below 0.08.
I don't know that anybody is. Right. I think they're trying to move something. There was a movement or a call to move it to 0.04.
Right.
Which would be, okay, buzz driving can impair your ability, your skills behind the wheel.
You could look at that and say, well, were you ever charged with drunk driving?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'm trying to think of what would be the scenario, but you were at 0.05.
Let's say your name is Beto. And the cops pull you over, but you don't run. You didn't run. Oh, wait, you did.
You have a much better scenario than I could come up with.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for helping me out.
I just picked the name out of thin air. Just out of nowhere. Yeah.
By the way, what do you think about the one with Beto, that the critique or whatever, the review he gave of some performance where he talked about, you know, some dance performance, he talked about
the women wouldn't
be there except for their big breasts or whatever, like that. And he had apologized and
yeah, you can't say that.
He was 19 years old when he did it. And it was like, no, that doesn't apply to the election today either, folks.
Yeah, right.
Most likely it does. Now, you can bring it out, and somebody may not vote for him because of it, but nobody in Austin, Texas is not going to not vote for him because of
it. It's about what he says and does, you know, right now, and what he says about what he did back then.
But how do you, again, so the point we're trying to make on perjury is the fact that hers is about a specific behavior that can be measured. Did you or did you not tell somebody? You said no. We got a witness that said you did. Now, do they find that woman?
That would
be the next step, right? Mm-hmm. They would find the woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, she doesn't have to testify.
No. Nope.
Wait a minute. The Senate can subpoena you, can't they? Yeah.
Well, I mean, if they wanted to do another hearing. Yeah.
But that'd be interesting.
I was thinking in terms of the FBI question.
That's somebody, you know, he's new that's come aboard. Will the FBI interview him? And then they have the name of the woman. They know the name of the woman that she helped. Mm-hmm. Her name appears.
I don't know, because it depends on, really, they were given a broader scope on Monday. The president, or maybe it actually officially happened late Sunday, the president broadening the scope, you know, to being able to interview anybody and anything that was tied to those claims. Okay. But I don't know if it's necessarily something that she said that it would be the investigation. I'm sorry, the background check would include that, which is something she claimed.
Yeah, they have the name McClain, so I'm sure he's given the investigators her full name.
Right.
And if she's alive, I'm assuming that, you know, you wouldn't, with somebody in the Judiciary Committee, if this thing went any further, if they're going to stick with her as this witness and the Democrats are going to stick by this and Republicans are going to stick by it, the next thing would be to get her. And then if you had the boyfriend and his testimony, and then the woman that she actually helped with the lie detector, if she helped her, the alleged helping with the lie detector test, if she comes forward and says, yes, she helped me with the lie detector test, you got her.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's my question, too, on asking for the materials that Grassley asked for. By the way, on the video or audio related to or of the process of the lie detector test, he's asked for that before. My question is, if the Senate committee officially asks her for that, because that really was presented as evidence. Except for they didn't get to scrutinize the methodology of it. It was just the results, right? The results being presented as part of the evidence. Well, now that she has testified in front of the Senate, because at first Grassley asked it before she testified. But does the Senate have the power to subpoena those documents, that information? I mean, is it binding legally, I guess is my question now that she's testified? Because that's where the official claim is made in regards to the Senate committee in consideration for Brett Kavanaugh as Supreme Court Justice. So would that not be part of the legal process? Are her lawyers legally bound to turn that over? I don't know. I didn't see anybody write it that way. I'm just asking a question. But I would think, because it's part of the process and they presented the results as part of the evidence, then they would be compelled to turn that information over. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's an interesting point.
I don't know if that's the case or not.
Yeah, I don't know that either.
I don't.
Yeah, good point, though.
Because it's different before she testified. And that's the first time he asked for, I'm just talking about just the lie detector test.
Right.
The audio or video, any audio or video related to it. Because as she officially basically, and under oath, she testified and they used that as part of the evidence.
He's still requesting it and hasn't gotten it.
I wonder if they're just delaying, or, you know, if they believe if they delay long enough that the vote will get through and this whole thing goes away. I don't know that they're legally compelled or not. I'm not sure. I'm just asking the question.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Dairy was the high-profile ag issue connected to U.S., Mexican, and Canadian negotiations that led to what is being called the USMC trade agreement. But as the chief ag negotiator of the U.S. Trade Representative's Office, Greg Dowd, notes, wheat was also a sticking point in ag trade between our nation and our northern neighbor. Specifically, U.S. wheat could only be sold in Canada as feed wheat.
In trade terms, we say that that does not meet the terms for national treatment. In other words, they have to treat our wheat the same as their wheat if it's the same quality.
The recent agreement between the U.S. and Canada, however, means that
Canada has now agreed to grade imports of U.S. wheat in a manner no less favorable than Canadian wheat, and that's a big step forward.
Ambassador Dowd adds Canada will no longer require a country of origin labeling statement on U.S. wheat imports.
Now, there's some things related to seed use that are a little uncertain at this point, but a North Dakota farmer should be able, if he wants to use a Canadian elevator across the border, he ought to be able to do that now as a result of this.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. So it's good. We're in for a couple of really interesting days. I'll tell you this, though. I think that if the FBI background check comes in and there's nothing new,
right,
and it's all the same, or if it even throws more suspicion at Dr. Ford's testimony, at that point you have a vote this weekend and you move on from it. Now, will they continue the investigation of Feinstein? I think they should, as to whether she leaked it, because that's about Senate rules and Senate protocol. So I believe that that will go on. Will they, you know, if they believe they could get Dr. Ford on perjury, or suspect that they could if they investigated more, will they continue that? I don't know. I would doubt it. I think that if they get the vote and he is, you know, they get the vote and he's in, he's confirmed, I think that's the end of it, because to me, I think that's Republicans who view that as the victory.
For Omnitracs, here's your forecast.
It may not sound like much that an area could get 6 inches of rainfall and be under flash flood watches and warnings, but that's what we have over the next couple days in effect for multiple states, including California, Arizona, Nevada, Utah, Colorado, and Idaho. where even 6 to 10 inches of rain is enough to dislodge sandy soil, rocks and tree limbs, and flood dry creek beds. All due to the remains from Tropical Storm Rosa. You'll need the wipers. Heavy rain on I-40, I-10, I-17 from Phoenix up to I-40, and portions of I-15 from San Diego all the way to Salt Lake City. Elsewhere, mountain snow north of I-90 in Idaho and Montana. Rain on I-94 through North Dakota and Minnesota. Look for heavy showers today on the PA Turnpike from central PA into New York City and Boston. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Their fingers. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
We do.
Oh, yeah. Sure. He's Eric. I'm Gary. And I started thinking if the NFL moved the goalposts like the Democrats have over the last week, the Buffalo Bills would have won the Super Bowl in 1990.
There'd be no wide right.
Right.
Or during the kick, if they saw it was going to be wide right, they could move it. They just have a bunch of Democrats. Oh, no, this is what we need. I would love to see that. Let's hire a bunch of Democrats and liberals to be on the field during each kick. This could be a new rule. And when they kick, if it looks like it's not, they get a chance to correct it by moving the goalpost. They're good at it.
I want to play this audio cut here. This is Senator Tom Cotton talking to Tucker Carlson, okay? Actually, two nights ago, but it's important here. We didn't get a chance to play it last night. Yeah. We didn't have the audio at the time, but I want to play it as he talks about where we are at this point.
Tucker, it is pretty one-sided down here. That army of surrogates needs to get a lot bigger if they're going to take me on, because it's very easy to defend Judge Kavanaugh. He has a stellar record on the bench. He has a long and distinguished history of public service, and he has undergone six background checks, Tucker. Six background checks. And now somehow the FBI is supposed to turn up new information in just a few days to satisfy all the Democrats. Yet, as soon as we agreed to have a limited investigation by the FBI into current credible allegations, of which I would say there are none, but to humor them, to give them a few days, they immediately started moving the goalposts, saying that we have to interview 24 witnesses and has to take weeks and on and on and on. It's never going to end, Tucker. This is not about trying to get the facts or get the proof. It's about trying to stop Brett Kavanaugh from being confirmed to the Supreme Court. That all comes to an end this week, Tucker.
What I find so striking is that he's a sitting federal judge who's authored scores and scores of opinions, and yet we're not debating any of them. His judicial philosophy is not even up for debate. It's all about his high school yearbook. Does it strike you this conversation is unbecoming of a country as advanced as ours? It's just so stupefyingly dumb. Why?
It is pretty amusing to see Democratic senators poring over a high school yearbook as if it were the Da Vinci Code.
That's my favorite line there.
Right.
But, you know, that's where we are. I really wonder how much, you know, talk today. We only had one call today. Very few. We've been doing this for a long time. As I said, this week marks my 29th year in talk radio. Hmm. We know when the Democrats have an argument.
Right.
Or when they believe they have an argument.
Right.
We know Democrats don't have an argument and they don't believe that they have an argument. The polls show that, you know, for example, what was it, 75% of Americans. Which means that's close to almost half of Democrats when you get to that kind of level. They believe Dianne Feinstein was completely wrong for not, you know, taking that letter and going through the process. And so right from that point on, the Democrats haven't been able to sell their message to half of their party. Looks at it and say, okay, that's just not good. There is a, as we said, the poll that shows that 60% of Americans believe that if the FBI has no corroborating evidence after this, you confirm him.
Right.
You confirm him to be a Supreme Court justice. Americans look at it. Americans believe in due process. The one call we had today didn't even talk about anything. Well, he's unprofessional because of the way that he acted, which is, again, was the talking point. And as we reminded the caller, he's about 2 or 3 days past that talking point, which really died a couple of days ago. They moved on from that talking point to something else. But really, that's it. And that's how weak it is. And anybody knows. Look, you accuse me? Because you think about it. The accusation actually has been expanded because not just attempted assault, but because she claimed I can't think of the other man's name. Mark Judge was there. Mm-hmm. That's almost an attempted gang rape, isn't mm-hmm. it?
Right.
And then the gang rape allegations came along. So you sit there and you see a Kavanaugh, and as we talked about, he was angry.
Yeah.
You'd be angry, too.
Right.
Well, he shouldn't be angry in a job interview. That's not a job interview.
No.
A job interview is not when people are testifying under oath. A job interview is not when you have senators in the Judiciary Committee looking at you and saying, I believe her, which means they're accusing you of sexual assault on an allegation alone. That's a personal attack on you as an individual. But still, that's all they have.
Well, I thought it was unprofessional.
Yeah, because you're running out of any type of argument to defend the person that you were hoping could ensure that Kavanaugh never serves on the Supreme Court of the United States. We know what it's about. We know what it's always been about. I just wonder what happens if you get to the point where we know, I mean, after the, and I don't know, is the FBI, because we asked, you know, where's the FBI going with this background check? Are they going to talk to Ford's old boyfriend? And Ford's old boyfriend identified Ford's girlfriend, identified her by name, as saying she told this woman, mm-hmm. I'll help you with mm-hmm. and show you how, and I'll help you with how to beat a lie detector test. Well, if they can find that woman, and I said earlier, if she's alive, the reason I said that is she can only be a witness if she's alive. But if she's alive and they find her and she's willing to testify and she says, yeah, I mean, under oath, yeah, if she helped me do it, you've got a perjury charge. Everything falls apart. It's already all of these cases are falling. Every day another layer is being peeled from these allegations against Kavanaugh.
I think right now, and again, you know, I don't know the answer to the question I asked earlier about her lawyers being compelled to forward that information and materials that Chuck Grassley called for, but assume that's not the case and they're not legally compelled to do so, even still, they would resist doing it. I think they're going to resist whether they are legally compelled or not. But they're likely doing that. Why? Well, because if she's telling the truth during the lie detector test, which they say, I mean, that's the whole point of a lie detector test, is that you passed it. Except there were different questions. If they asked a different question and she answered that question truthfully, she would pass it. Video and audio, the methodology of that test is important.
And so if you use that as part of the proof to corroborate that it did happen,
yeah.
that you were telling other people, because it doesn't corroborate the crime.
No.
It just, and we can't even get to the point of her, the what she says is corroboration that she had been talking about this.
Right.
She won't even let that evidence be seen, all that evidence be seen, which is, sorry, the therapist notes, you brought it up. You use that as evidence
yes.
that you've been talking about it.
Right.
You said certain things, but you haven't released everything that the therapist has. Sorry, when you make the accusation and you say this is what backs up, not the crime, because you have nothing to corroborate the crime, so you came in with your lawyers as the secondary point you were going to make. Well, maybe, you know, that hoping that the witnesses might corroborate you, and they didn't. So your second point was, but I've been talking about it for years, and that should give me credibility, and you won't release that evidence to the people who are the judges in this case.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then you lose even more credibility. And that's why when they say she's credible, when the members of the Democrat Senate say Judiciary Committee say she's credible, well, you can't make that case, because on every single instance when you want to get to the credibility by getting more evidence that she actually has, her lawyers refuse to hand it over.
Because if she is telling the truth and has been all along, why would you refuse to hand it over? In fact, why would you not voluntarily hand it over without being asked? Because here is the proof. Here's everything you need to know. Here are my notes. Here are the therapist notes. Here is the audio and or video from the lie detector test. You would be out to prove that this happened. Isn't she out to prove it happened?
Yeah.
Well, you're going to hand over everything voluntarily. Why would her lawyers not encourage her to do that? Listen, Dr. Ford, this is going to vindicate you. This is going to show. Why would you not be doing that?
Or at least it sets a path.
That's the most evidence
that
you have.
Right. It's the most evidence that you have, that you've even been talking about it.
Yes.
And you decided to use, you and your lawyers decided to use it as evidence, yet you won't present all of the evidence.
It helps build your case.
Right. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
You have a weak case to begin with. It would give you a little path to go down. And you're saying, no, sorry, you can't have that evidence.
I mean, you would want to provide everything that was within your control to provide. What the other people say in terms of people corroborating her story or not, that's on them. You can't compel them to testify, or you can't compel them. Dr. Ford can't. Her lawyers can't compel them to talk to the FBI or any of that. But what they can do, what is within their control, is turning over every piece of evidence that you have in your control. And why would you not do that? That helps to build your case. You're right, Gary. It doesn't prove anything. But if you're in Dr. Ford's position, you're looking to be vindicated and show that this happened, because you're being criticized and your credibility is being criticized all along the way. You have not proven your case. You would want to turn that over. If you're telling the truth, you would want to turn over everything that you have. It's everything within your power. And that's it. It's all you have. But it would be your best attempt at being believed here.
I really believe that I think if I was a betting man, that the odds, that the reason that Ford's lawyers want her to talk to the FBI again is because she's going to remember people, more witnesses here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Ramirez, too, because Ramirez's lawyer said, well, we directed the FBI to more witnesses out there, because mm-hmm. the whole point is to extend this.
Yes.
Even delay. If the witnesses, okay, right, we can, well, you have to talk to those, because then the FBI will come back and say, well, we had, let's say they come back Friday, we had a limitation, we couldn't find these people. Well, then we can't vote on it until we find all these people to find out, because they've claimed that they have additional witnesses, and the whole thing is just keep extending this week in and week out.
Forget
and
what
week in
Blake and
out.
Coons said on Sunday night on 60 Minutes. Forget what they said about, we think this is fair, the week, you know, the FBI, what they called investigation, is the 1 week we believe is fair.
Yeah,
I don't expect that position to hold if indeed you start, it comes back and it does not show anything different than what we already know.
Right, but I do think that that's what's going on, is they want, you know, they want, because the Ramirez's lawyer, well, we pointed them to some new witnesses out there and some new people to talk to, and I bet you that's why Ford's lawyers want her to talk. Oh, there are, I've just remembered more witnesses to this whole thing, and then you have to start the investigation over again, and then, well, the FBI needs to work on this another week and investigate these people or do a background check on these people too, and you just keep extending it. Look, I do not think that the goalposts at all have been embedded into any type of concrete that is going to settle in the next week.
Right. Yeah. I just don't think we're going to see anything change here. Nothing is going to be different.
866-90-RED-EYE.
What's the difference between standard number 2 diesel and premium fuel? Ron Jessen is Director of Product Management for Cenex, the makers of Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Diesel Fuel, and he fills us in.
You may want to consider the total operational cost behind the price of the pump. If you look at the cost for replacement and you look at the cost of ongoing maintenance, unfortunately, those costs haven't gone down. They've actually continued to increase. But switching to a premium diesel fuel can really result in some large operational savings with the fuel economy and reducing the equipment repair costs. Our fleet owners, if you want to consider trying a premium diesel fuel in the past, or if you have considered it in the past, now is really the time to take advantage of that with the lower diesel fuel prices to try out that premium diesel fuel.
There are more than 1,450 Cenex locations in 19 states across the Midwest and Pacific Northwest. Visit Cenex.com to find a Cenex location and learn more. This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Red Eye Radio, he is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. It will be an interesting day, especially if the FBI comes out. And because that's the thing, that because I heard also yesterday they had completed it yesterday. There were a couple of articles stating that they had completed it, and then they would release it today. If they do, that means a possibility of a vote by Friday, and that's why Dianne Feinstein came out yesterday and said, well, Friday for a vote would be too early. Yeah, but next Friday would be too early for you, and the Friday after would be too early for you.
Well, everything before the November election is too early.
Yes,
then after the November election, anything before November of 2020 is too early.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.